personal watchdog.
Is anyone awake up at Capitol Hill?
Sniffing out the corruption in our healthcare policies.
You are literally selling the population of this wonderful country to a death sentence.
He's Carl Lenore.
What's wrong with you people?
On the Superhuman Radio Network.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a really, really powerful show for you today. During the first half hour, I'll be joined by my co-host, Dr. Jeff Galini, to talk about something that you can't talk about often enough, and it's pre-diabetes. There's a lot of people out there who just don't get it. You can avoid diabetes completely when you are pre-diabetic, and we're going to look at some new interventions. Then we're going to talk about the evidence of changes to children's brain rhythms when they are following a brain training program. Young children can benefit from this for you parents out there. Then at the top of the second hour, Dr. Dominic D'Agostino is joining us to rebuttal a recent T Nation article on exogenous ketone supplements being a scam. I sent him the article. He read it thoroughly, and I think that his opinion is going to call into question some of the research cited in that article. But without further ado,
this is Science for Humans with Dr. Jeff Galini.
Hey, Dr. J, how you doing?
Good, Carl. How about you?
Fantastic. Now that I didn't kill myself this morning.
Yeah, you know, we were just talking about that. Supplements do work, don't they?
Yeah, so real quick, I took a combination of beta-alanine and niacin. I take niacin 500 milligrams as a pre-workout because it's a vasodilator. It's an anti-aggregator for blood, which means it makes blood more slippery. It also improves growth hormone response to exercise and energy utilization. But not when you take it with beta-alanine, which drops blood sugar. So effectively, I dropped blood sugar and dropped fatty acid release into the bloodstream. I had nothing to run on. I had a scary bout of hypoglycemia. I started to sweat. I started to feel faint. I had to sit on a bench literally for 15 minutes until I came out of it. So
yeah,
supplements work. Supplements work.
They do. So pre-diabetes, man, I think that's becoming one of my pet peeve subjects, you know?
Well, you know why, Dr. J? Because it really offers an opportunity. It's not like other things. It actually is a window to an opportunity, right?
Yeah. Well, it is. You know, more than 86 million adults have prediabetes, and one-third of people over 18 of age, and over half of people 65 of age, and most of them don't even know it. I mean, this is the American Institute for Diabetes giving us these numbers. I'm like, that is just ridiculous. I mean, you know, we were talking last week, I think, or the week before about childhood obesity. I mean, this is why we have so many pre-diabetics.
So, pre-diabetes is when blood sugar is under 125 milligrams a liter, right?
Yeah, your normal range, blood sugar is basically, they're measuring how much glucose, how much sugar is in your bloodstream. So, less than 100 is normal. Pre-diabetes is in that 100 to 125 range. And then diabetes is 126 or higher. But, you know, what you should think about is pre-diabetes should be a wake-up call, because that means you are on the path to becoming a diabetic. And this is why I think it gets me so fired up, Carl, is, you know, again, thank goodness for medical doctors, but they know this.
What do they do, Doc? They go, you're not diabetic yet. There's nothing we can do about it. You know what I mean? It's like that window from 100 to 125, they just sit it out and wait for you to get above 125.
Yeah, when you're 120, well, they actually put some people, if you're approaching that 100, let's say you're at 98, they will put you on some insulin. I mean, the little tablets. I mean, so they are already prescribing things for pre-diabetes, pre-diabetics. But basically, yeah, you're right. They say, you know what, let's test you again in 2 months because I can't give you this medication until you actually are diabetic, type 2.
Right. Which is when they should be sitting down with their patient and having a frank discussion about diet and exercise. But the problem is that the American Diabetes Association or Society, they recommend that these people continue to eat carbohydrates. It's crazy. You know, if you're a doctor and somebody comes in and says, I just discovered I'm severely lactose intolerant, would you tell them, well, keep fighting against it, eat cheese, drink dairy, no, the doctor would say, you need to stop consuming dairy. When people have high blood sugar, doctors should say, you need to cut back on your carb intake.
There's too much money. You know, why haven't they come up with a cure for cancer? Because there's too much money in chemo radiation. Why haven't they taken this diabetes and reversed it? Because there's too much money involved. You know, I'm sorry, the pharmaceutical industry, doctors, the whole thing, it's all about the mighty dollar. You know, we know, even the National Institute of Diabetes on their website says, diabetes prevention is proven, possible, and powerful. This is them. Studies show that people at high risk for diabetes can prevent the onset of the disease by losing 5 to 7% of their weight.
And how do you do that, Dr. J?
Yeah.
Diet and exercise.
Well, and then they go on to say, and then they tell you how to do it. They go on to say, okay, this means if you're 200 pounds, you need to lose 10 to 14 pounds. Okay, now you've told me what I need to do. Then they go on to say, get at least 30 minutes of moderate intensity physical exercise 5 days a week. Eat a variety of foods that are low in fat and reduce the number of calories you eat per day. Boom. Wrong. How about get rid of sugar and cut back on your carbohydrates, but at least they're telling people that it can be prevented, but they don't give you all the information. How about a diet plan, you know?
Yeah, well, and I don't think they care. They put that information out there, but they know people aren't going to do it, and their doctors aren't telling them to do it. The doctors don't tell them to do that stuff. When a person's diabetic, the doctor doesn't go, look, you need to cut back on your carbohydrates and sugar. They don't say that.
And I think you remember I was at a doctor's conference a couple years ago, and I'm sitting with all the drug companies, you know, Pfizer, Merck. They're doing their thing. I'm doing my thing. They don't like me. I'm wanting to find out what it is they're doing. Well, one of them had a pamphlet, and it was for their new type 2 diabetes medicine. And they had a picture of a guy. He was slightly overweight, maybe 15, 20 pounds. And it said something like, hi, my name is Phil, and I'm 50, I'm overweight, I don't exercise, and I've got type 2 diabetes. I know what I need to do to fix this, but I just don't have time.
Yeah.
Boom, we're there for you. We know you don't have time.
It's almost like they're making the excuse for people, aren't they?
All right. Well, and of course the guy's going to go, yeah, that's right. You know, I don't want to change my diet. I'm too busy. I don't have time to exercise. You know, I just take this pill, and they fixed it for me.
I was at a friend's house recently, and this woman's brother-in-law, he had his thyroid ablated because he had thyroid cancer, so they have him on thyroid hormone, and they've he's a mess because of his thyroid hormone. Nice guy. So he tells me that he's pre-diabetic. So in like three sentences, I tell him what to do, and he goes, I just wish they would just give me a pill. You know, give me some diabetes medication, he said. And I said, why? Yeah. I said, that's just going to mask the symptoms. You're still going to have diabetes underneath that. You're still going to have the problems associated with diabetes. You're still going to develop heart disease. Why would you do that? And people don't care.
Well, I don't know if they don't care or if what it is, because, you know, we already know Well, I don't know. I mean, smoking causes cancer. People still smoke.
Right.
I mean, what is the deal? I mean, you know, you can prevent this, but you're going to have a heart attack. You're going to have, you know, issues, but you don't do anything about it.
Well, I think it's denial. I think that most people believe this happens to other people, not me. Because I'll do something different. I'll stop smoking eventually, or I'll change my diet eventually. But they just never do it, and then they develop a disease. But I think it really comes down to denial, right? You have to be in denial to think that you are going to do these same behaviors like everybody else and not develop a disease like everybody else.
And so, yeah, and if you're older, don't go from the standpoint, you know, oh, well, I've been doing this for my whole life. You know, I deserve to eat terrible because I'm 60 years old. You only want to live to be 62? I mean, again, I don't get the attitude. Again, I don't know if it's denial, if it's just, you know, society saying, hey, this is just normal, deal with it. But, you know, that isn't what we're about, man. We're trying to help people, you know, and I think that's why it's such an important topic. You know, you got to remember that when you eat carbohydrates and sugars, you know, your body produces a hormone, which is called insulin, and it helps to control this blood sugar. But when you have too much sugar to insulin, this is where you get an increase in sugar in your bloodstream. Now, that doesn't seem like a big deal. You might think, well, I'll burn it up tomorrow. No. This is what leads to diabetes, because your body's whole imbalance is going to be so whacked out that you're going to constantly, I don't know if your body actually lowers the insulin, but you become insulin resistant, you know. And this,
well, no,
you know
how the body lowers the insulin? It runs out of gas. The pancreas can't keep up. So as insulin sensitivity rises, insulin insensitivity rises, the cell becomes more insulin insensitive. The pancreas has to produce more insulin to get the same job done. At some point in time, the insensitivity outpaces the pancreas' ability to produce insulin, and now you have frank diabetes. You have a cell that's starving for glucose, and the glucose is plenty of glucose in the blood, but the insulin cannot get it across into the cell. And so, and you know, the other thing that people need to understand, if you have cancer in your family, then pre-diabetes may as well be called the let's get cancer faster diet. Because there's a growing body of evidence that shows that diabetes and insulin, high insulin levels, increase the risk of certain cancers, especially kidney, pancreatic, and colorectal cancer, which are on the rise. But diabetic people get cancer at a much higher rate than non-diabetic people. So if you think that there's cancer in your genes, like you have a susceptibility to develop cancer, and you're pre-diabetic, and you don't stop and change the outcome by changing your diet and lifestyle, you should just get a T-shirt that says, I'm working on getting cancer.
Well, and the other thing is that, you know, pre-diabetics are more likely, as we said, heart disease and a stroke. I mean, you know, these are things that you just can't run down. Somebody told me Radio Shack closed, but you just can't run down to Radio Shack and get you some new parts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. I don't understand, you know, why somebody can't control the amount of food that they eat. You know, why can't you cut back on those donuts and things? I mean, why is it a necessity? Why do you have to put sugar in everything? And why can't you exercise? I mean, I don't know. Maybe my mindset, Carl, is just I've been doing it for so long that I just don't understand when your doctor says, you have pre-diabetes, you got a phone, you go on the internet, and you look at what could happen next, and you look at all these things, wouldn't that motivate you to get off your butt and go walk, join a gym?
You know, it surprises me what does not motivate people. It surprises me that when people are sick and they can avoid a disease, that in and of itself doesn't motivate them to change their lifestyle. Why don't we do this, Dr. J? Let's take a break. And when we come back, let's talk about some strategies for people out there who are pre-diabetic to perhaps change their outcome. Why don't we do that?
Sounds good.
All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Science for Humans.
How to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide. Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 has stunned the athletic world. Even current and former steroid users can't believe how fast they recover from exercise. If you're looking for a product with real, noticeable results, look no further. In the words of one customer, this is the single best bodybuilding supplement I've ever used. Visit Synthogen.com and get your X2 today.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Ketones are being called the fourth macronutrient because the body loves to use them for energy. Now you can leverage the hunger-fighting, mood-elevating effects of ketones with Keto OS. Take one package in the morning and don't eat again until you're hungry. You won't feel lethargic and you'll be alert and focused. Try Keto OS today. Go to superhumanradio.com, click the Keto OS banner ad to take advantage of the 5-day experience trial package. Leverage the power of ketones with Keto OS.
What do professional athletes such as Kobe Bryant and A-list celebrities such as Selma Hayek have in common? They are all touting the benefits of bone broth. But unless you have countless hours to cook every week or can hire your own personal chef, you're probably missing out on these critical nutrients. Osteobroth is a high-protein, standardized, consistent bone broth in a convenient powdered form. Use promo code SHR for 20% off at osteobroth.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using Can-See eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit Can-See eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. Can-See eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse Can-See eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how Can-See eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. So we talk about pre-diabetes on the show a lot, and that's because it needs to be talked about a lot, because there are people out there who just don't get it, that within 6 weeks, a few months, people can reverse their type 2 diabetes, their insulin resistance. So let's talk about some strategies, easy strategies. Number one, change the carbohydrate sources. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably, you know, next to exercise. But, yeah, change your carbohydrate sources. It isn't going to hurt you to even eliminate refined carbohydrates, sugar, you know, donuts, cake.
What about starches, right? So let's say a guy is going, okay, I'm going to cut the sugar out, but I love to have potatoes. I'm going to have red potatoes instead of white potatoes. Is that enough, or do you think for a period of time, not forever, but just for now, even the potatoes have to come out of the diet?
You know, I guess it would depend on how overweight the person is and what they needed to lose and, you know, what type of diet. Normally, these people that are in the pre-diabetics aren't people who are eating, you know, potatoes and yams and pasta. They are people who are eating those things, but they're usually deep fat fried. They're along with all the sweets and candies and junks. So I would bet that if you were to cut out all that junk and eat a healthy diet, that your numbers would come back down.
What about making starchy complex carbs the smallest portion of your carbohydrate intake and shifting more to vegetables for your carbohydrates?
Yeah.
But don't you run a risk if you are insulin resistant and you don't have blood sugar? It takes a day or two for insulin sensitivity to start to adjust down.
Yeah, you need to increase your protein. I mean, you've got to get protein up. You've got to get on vegetables. You know, again, you got to get more fiber. It's your whole system is whacked up. I mean, I would say for the first 4 weeks, I mean, yeah, you want to be on a relatively lower carbohydrate diet, similar to what bodybuilders do. I mean, when we're trying to drop body fat, you know, we don't lower our protein, we lower our carbohydrates. I mean, it's really just a healthy eating plan.
Okay,
but,
what
you know, if you
what Dr. J, what about supplements that will help the type 2 diabetic over the hump? Our alpha lipoic acid has been shown to be an insulin mimetic. It improves insulin sensitivity also. Resveratrol has been shown to be as effective as glucophage, metformin.
I like chromium picolinate.
There you go, chromium picolinate, another one. Exactly. And you don't need a lot. You know, 300 to 500 micrograms a day for a couple, 3 weeks, and your cells get topped out with it.
And exercise, I mean, that is probably the thing I need to put at the top of the list. You know, you got to exercise. I mean, most, I would say probably all the people who are in this pre-diabetic state don't exercise. I mean, you're sitting at home, you're watching TV, you know, get up and move around. Summertime, it's so easy to go out and walk. I mean, again, you just got to develop a new habit. It takes 30 days. To develop a new habit, you know, get it on an exercise program. You don't necessarily have to go to a gym, but I would recommend it. You know, don't be afraid. Not everyone in there, it looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean,
right.
People are in there just to be healthy. And I would say the majority of people in the gym these days are just there to be healthy, you know.
So activity is so important. I got a message from a listener not too long ago and was asking me how can I explain the role of the pancreas in controlling diabetes, that the pancreas is so robust. And I said, no, the pancreas is not robust. I said, back in the day, our ancestors controlled blood sugar by being active. If they ate a high glycemic meal, they didn't sit down and watch television for 4 hours. They were working in the fields. They were out there working. We manage blood sugar getting too high by activity. But blood sugar getting too low is something that the body does respond properly to. And we have a very, very sophisticated system of adrenal hormones, stored glycogen in the liver, glucagon, that when the blood sugar gets too low, the body can release it. But when the blood sugar gets too high, the body has got its hands tied. All it can do is produce insulin. That's it.
Yeah. Now, look here. You know, if you haven't been to the doctor, you know, you need to go on a regular basis. I mean, I go once a year, and I don't go because I'm sick. I go to get all of my numbers checked out. Excuse me. I go and have my you know, LDLs and my thyroid, my growth hormone, testosterone, but I'm looking at all my sugar levels. Because most of you, a good variety, many, don't even know that you're in that stage. But I want to give Carl a couple things that if you are experiencing these types of things, then you may be pre-diabetic, and you had better get over to the doctor and get checked out right away. One of them is if you got blurry vision, which means sudden spikes, because your blood sugar is increasing and decreasing, it impairs your ability for your eye to bend and focus.
Mm.
Now, that doesn't mean, you know, just aging. That means sudden spikes. Excessive thirst is probably one of the biggest signs of not only pre-diabetics, but having diabetes. If you've got wounds and infections that just won't heal, high blood sugar slows down your circulation. And then just being tired, extreme fatigue. So those are a couple of things that if you've got these type of symptoms, you know, you might want to get checked out.
Frequent unexplained urination. Like if you drink a lot of water, you're going to go pee-pee a lot. But if you don't drink a lot of water, but you urinate a lot. The other thing is, this is really something that people, men can figure out better because we drip when we go to the bathroom. But if your urine is thick and not watery, that could be a sign of sugar in your urine.
Yeah. If you have sudden weight gain or weight loss, again, you know, those are signs of your being in that high sugar range. And then darkened areas around the skin. You know, this, again, is a sign.
Advanced glycation end products. Advanced glycation end products start to gather in the skin. Dark spots on the skin. That's from advanced glycation end products, and that's happening on organs, too, if it's happening on the outside.
Yeah, so folks, you know, take it seriously because, you know, I'm not as passionate about this just for fun. You know, I hate to see people go into an illness that can be prevented because once you're there, there's no coming back. It's irreversible. But when you're in the pre-stages, or we used to call it borderline diabetes, you can do it. Think about driving on a highway where there's a cliff. You got a guardrail. I mean, you know, that's your warning sign. Once you go over, it's too late.
You know, one other thing I want to say.
Yeah.
You can walk into any CVS drugstore or Walgreens and buy a glucometer with 10 test strips for like $9.95. You're saying, well, how can that be, Carl? Well, because the test strips are like 50 cents each. So they give you that first one at such a stupidly cheap price. But all you need is those 10 test strips. You go in and you buy them for $9.95. You check your fasting blood sugar in the morning 2 days in a row. And if your fasting blood sugar 2 days in a row is up above 90, you are moving into the pre-diabetes realm. Save the other 8 test strips. Now start your interventions for the next week. Cut out the carbs. Just cut out the carbs. Go to vegetables. Cut out the sugar. Cut out the starches. Go to veggies and lean proteins. Then take a test strip and test your blood sugar after doing that. See where it goes. If it's moving down into the 80s, now you're making headway. Then try something else. Maybe include an R-alpha-lipoic acid supplement or a resveratrol supplement or a chromium picolinate supplement and do that for a week or two. Then check again. You can get this under control all by yourself. You don't have to go to the doctor. And you have access to the same tools the doctor uses if you go and take advantage of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can slowly start adding back, you know, a yam or something, you know, some complex carbohydrates. But like you said, you got 8 test strips. See what it affects you. But normally, once you get it under control, moderate carbohydrates are not going to affect you. It's excess and sugar and refined carbohydrates that really probably got you there.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, really good discussion. And I know we've talked about this stuff on Super Radio before, but this really presents an opportunity to get people healthy before they get sick in the first place. This is a red flag. If your blood sugar is rising, and you know, back in about 2008, we did a show about a study that showed that pre-diabetes target blood sugar has the same negative effects as full-blown type 2 diabetes. It just moves slower. So you are rotting your body away just like a full-blown diabetic is, and you don't know it. So you need to get this stuff taken care of. Dr. J, anything exciting on the supplement Santa line?
Man, tonight is it. Christmas in September. So anyone who's listening, if you're hearing this on podcasts after today, it's too late, but 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time. Supplement Santa, Dr. Jeff, will be going live on Dr. Jeff's Facebook page. $300 worth of EFX Training Ground products and a wad of cash. That's what's going to be given away to the winner tonight.
And we have to give a shout-out to two huge fans of both Superhuman Radio and Science for Humans, and they happen to live in Billings, Montana. Go figure. And that's Seth Williamson and Angela Gale, because they're listening live today. How do you like that, Dr. J?
They are listening. That's gossip. They are listening live.
Yeah.
As soon as I get done with the show, I always go out and get their opinion, and they either give me a thumbs up or tell me I need to do a better job.
Seth already messaged me and said this is a great topic, so I think you're going to get lots of
kudos. Oh,
good. There you go. All right, look, brother, I'll talk to you later, okay?
All right, take care. See you, everybody.
Take care. All right, so stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
How to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
A legendary name in hardcore supplementation. Iron Mag Labs. 100% original, patent-pending Andro compound. The most effective, hardcore, groundbreaking bodybuilding supplements in the world.
In the world.
Iron Mag Labs. Revolutionizing hardcore supplementation for more than a decade. Visit IronMagLabs.com. IronMagLabs.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Pure Isolate Whey Protein is the perfect complement to your muscle growth, fat loss, or fitness program. Packing an awesome amino acid profile, Muscle Gauge WPI is easily digested, lactose-free, sugar-free, and fat-free. The Pure Whey Protein Isolate used in Muscle Gauge's WPI is absorbed fast, transporting amino acids into muscle fibers to begin the repair and rebuilding process. Pure WPI delivers pharmaceutical-grade whey protein at a price you can afford. Don't pay more. Don't settle for less. Go to mgnstore.com today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise With Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
This is the Superhuman. This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. You know, we like to try to cover a variety of topics on this show, and there's a lot of people out there with young children. And so I saw a study recently, an embargoed study about evidence of changes to children's brain rhythms following brain training. So I asked Elisa to get the author on the show, Dr. Duncan Astle. How you doing, Dr. Astle?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. Talk about the why this research. What prompted you to want to do this research?
Here in Cambridge, we're interested in lots of different things. And one thing we're interested in is, why is it that some children do really well at school, whereas other children really struggle? And so we're interested in what are the differences between those kids. And if we understand that, are there any interventions that we can use that will help kids who are struggling? And so this whole idea of looking at interventions led us to the idea of training. So if you find some kind of skills that seem to be really important for doing well at school, can you train those skills, and will that training yield kind of wider benefits and changes in the brain? So that's really what kind of led us to get interested in this area.
So talk about the what were the training types? What is considered brain training for a young child?
Oh, that's a good question. So we focused on a particular skill called working memory. So we use working memory all the time. It's the ability to hold in mind and use small amounts of information for brief periods of time. So like if I gave you some digits to remember and then asked you to repeat them back, or maybe you had to repeat them back but in a different order, that's a kind of classic working memory task. And it turns out that working memory skills are really good predictors of how well children do at school.
But,
and children, go on.
Well, but can those assessment tests be used as skill exercises?
Yes. So there are various different training programs out there, all designed to train working memory. So people have come up with games which require kids to hold in mind small amounts of information. But gradually, as the training progresses, you have to hold in mind more and more and more and more. So the idea is that the kids kind of, I guess their capacity is stretched, in theory, by the training. And some really slightly wild claims are made about the benefits of the training. And as you can imagine, this kind of training is big business. And so you might imagine that we know all sorts of things about what the training's really doing and what its benefits are, but we don't, not really.
But so when I was a kid, I'm 58 years old, there was a game called Simon. And
right.
It was basically, it had four or six colors in a circle. They lit up and they made a sound. And you would watch the sequence and then you had to repeat the sequence. And each time you achieved that sequence, the sequence got longer by one additional light or color or sound. And you went until you could not reproduce that sequence again. It sounds to me like that game needs to be dusted off.
Yeah, working memory training. That sounds like a classic. Yeah, so we have used some games very similar to that. And what you see is, of course, when you come, you know, kids reach capacity, the limit, like you were saying. But if you come back a day or two later and get them to do it again, you find they can go a bit further than they did before. And gradually you find that there's this really big practice effect, that the more you do it, the better you get at the game.
So it's like resistance training on a muscle, right? So when you challenge the brain and it fails at a certain point, then there's some sort of super compensative effect that adjusts maybe neuroplasticity so that the brain doesn't fail again at that level.
Yeah, so there are lots of different mechanisms you could imagine might enable you to do better next time around. So like you were saying, it could be a kind of brain plasticity thing, like you're training the muscle and it gets stronger. It could be that you learn a new strategy. So it could be like you learn whatever kind of weight training you're doing, you learn to do it properly, and then you can lift more. And so you might be that, you know, with the working memory exercises, you get better because you're learning a better way of, a better system of doing the task. And there probably some other, you know, other plausible accounts people have given. But the really interesting thing is then to ask, what are the benefits of this training? So they get better at the task they're training on, but if you were to give them some other task that you think also taps working memory, would they be better at that as well? And if you gave them some math to do, would they get better at that as well? So that's kind of the big next question.
So to see if this type of exercise translates into basically RAM memory, right, of the brain, it translates to expanding RAM memory in practical applications like math or testing and so on and so forth.
Exactly. And people have made some really strong claims, you know, like working memory training is like the panacea. You know, you've got problems with math, problems with reading, problems with inattention. What you need is working memory training. But sometimes the studies that they cite in favor of that approach aren't always tremendously well designed. So, you know, no control group, or they've got a control group, but the control group don't really do anything. It's very obvious to them that they're the control group. And we know that all sorts of these kinds of things make a really, really massive difference. And so what we've kind of shown so far is that if we train the kids on working memory exercises, not only do they get better at those, but they get better at other working memory exercises. But what no one has really convincingly showed yet is that they then get better at maths or at reading. You know, it's not as simple as to say that if you train kids on, you know, the game that you described, you know, a few months later, they won't spontaneously have got better at maths.
So, but that has to be elucidated or disqualified through some rigorous research, in other words.
Yeah, exactly. So there have been some nice kind of randomized controlled trials done recently where they've really focused in on that question of, you know, what are the wider benefits of this kind of training? And the answer is that the wider benefits, at least of a very kind of simple training program, are, you know, minimal at best. And so the next thing that we're thinking about is, well, how do you make the training more effective? You know, how do you get kids to learn to see that their working memory is now better, and how can they use that in a kind of useful way? So how can they use it in the classroom? How can they use it when they're doing math sums and so on?
Well, I remember reading a study probably about 10 years ago that showed that children in a classroom setting, and these were relatively, these were like middle school students, where there was enriched oxygen pumped into the room versus normal oxygen levels in air, that that retention of what they learned in the lesson was held better 2 weeks later. And so there's obviously some, you know, the problem with this is a really great idea, but there are also some metabolic players in this as well when it comes to memory consolidation, isn't there?
Yeah, and I've never heard of that study, but I guess one thing we might then start to think of is what is it that's the kind of mediating factor? So when you're more alert, presumably you're perhaps attending better, and that gives rise to improvements in learning over time. Like, what are the mediating factors? What are the important mechanisms? Because I guess we're unlikely to start pumping classrooms full of oxygen as a kind of learning.
No, but teaching children to breathe deep, number one, could be an alternative. The other thing that affects memory consolidation across the spectrum of human age is quality sleep. And so you have to take that into account too.
It's actually in the UK, there's a big study starting funded by the Wellcome Trust, and they're interested in if we shift the timing of the school day, then can we see benefits in learning? So the idea is that for teenagers, their kind of sleep and wake cycles and when they're most alert is really quite different. And if we adjust the school day to take that into account, so lessons tend to start slightly later, usually about 10, 10:30, and they tend to go on longer, then will we see an improvement in the performance of the kids over time relative to schools that are matched carefully but haven't had their day adjusted? And that's precisely for the reason that you say, you know, that we know that these kind of cycles of quality sleep and periods of when you're awake and alert are likely to play a really key role.
Well, the other thing is letting teenagers sleep in later is a great idea, assuming that they're getting to sleep at a reasonably early period of time.
Sure.
But more importantly, you know, we cannot discount the introduction of artificial blue light late in the night. Kids are on their computers and then they just close the computer and go to bed, and they take longer to get into deeper sleep cycles because the adrenals and the locomotive hormones are saying, hey, it was just daylight a couple minutes ago. How can we go to sleep now?
Yeah, there's some really nice, I'm not necessarily familiar with the stuff on blue light levels, but there's some really nice data looking at mechanisms of memory consolidation, showing the role of particularly deep wave sleep and particular mechanisms that happen with the hippocampus, so a structure quite deep in the brain, which is really important in memory consolidation. And that kind of stuff only happens in these periods of slow wave sleep, so deep sleep, so high quality sleep. And so really anything that we can do to enhance that. So I often go into schools and do kind of sessions on kind of optimizing learning for students and for pupils. And one of the big things is to emphasize the importance of quality sleep.
Yeah, but you know, I remember being a teenager.
Yeah.
Staying up late was a rite of passage. It was like, oh, I'm an adult now. I'm staying up late. I'm going to watch TV until I get tired and go to sleep, and I'm in charge of my own life. And it's going to be hard unless kids really want to excel academically, unless that is a goal. You know, they don't care.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're right. I mean, I guess when the rubber hits the road, it always comes down to what kind of interventions can be delivered that will be effective. So, for example, in just practical terms, if this particular trial that I was describing is carefully conducted, then that'll be able to make a policy recommendation that, yeah, you're right. A proportion of those adolescents may stay up late, but if on average across the schools that are part of the trial, they see an improvement in the learning in the schools where the school day has been adjusted, then that's worth implementing more widely. And I guess it underscores something that's kind of been missing for a long time, and that is an evidence-based approach to the kind of interventions we deliver for learning. So in the UK, if you want to bring a drug to market, for example, then there's a very rigorous process for the licensing of that drug. You have to really show in a very solid way that this medication is effective for what you claim it's effective for. Whereas if you want to bring an intervention to the classroom, whether it be, you know, working memory training or getting kids to kind of stand up and do some exercises, there's no requirement for you to demonstrate the efficacy of what you're proposing. And that's a really, really massive problem because it means that there's no incentive for people to do proper research on these things because ultimately you don't need it. It means people come up with some really quite bogus ideas that are totally ineffective, and yet they're carefully packaged and carefully sold, and schools pay thousands of pounds for them. And really, I guess what we need is a kind of return to an evidence-based approach.
No, I agree. So on that note, what do you hope both clinicians and obviously parents and their children take away from your research?
So the reason that we ran our particular study is we're interested in the brain and how the brain works, how the brain develops, and what is the impact on a child's brain of putting them through working memory training in this way. And so the real take-home message from our study is that we've shown that it does produce marked and sustained changes in brain physiology and in the way that the brain works, and that those changes result in improvements or are associated with improvements in the children's working memory skills. But, and there's a big but, which is kind of very clear in the paper, but what we haven't shown is that those changes, those improvements, will yield very wide improvements in things like maths and literacy in the classroom. And we really kind of point forward to studies that are required in order to understand how we can kind of get these wide transfer benefits, these wide improvements from this kind of training. So we've shown the kind of basic mechanisms, how it works, and that it has some efficacy within the realm of working memory. But kind of the big take-home message is the next big job before we start making grand claims about the benefits is to consider how we can make the training effective in a real life, in a real world context.
So I don't see any harm in recommending that parents go on Amazon and look for an old version of Simon and give it to their young children, because if nothing else, it's going to give them some skill sets associated with remembering things for short period of time, like when someone just shouts out a phone number and 10 seconds later you forgot it. You know what I mean? But don't expect it to make them brilliant in math.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I agree entirely. And it comes back to this question of, you know, people often say to me, well, what's the harm? You know, so they don't get better at maths or literacy. It's not done any harm, which I agree with to a certain extent. But the problem is when you have parents and children are really very vulnerable people. And if your child has a problem at school and someone tells you that this product will improve it, there's nothing you wouldn't do to get it. And it means that we need to be really careful about the claims we make about these products, because when it comes to people's kids, you know, there's nothing they wouldn't do for them. And if you have a child who has a problem with working memory, and then that means that they're falling way behind their peers, what does it say to that child if you tell them this will fix it, and then after the training you find that they haven't caught up their peers in maths or literacy? That must be pretty demoralizing. And is it right to charge people large amounts of money for training interventions that don't do what they claim, what is claimed they do?
Yeah.
There are wider ethical issues as well.
I'm going to try to find, actually I was thinking about it. I probably read that study 16 or 17 years ago about hyperoxia in classrooms, because I was doing a lot of research in hyperoxia at that time for performance purposes. I'm going to try to find that study and send it to you. But also,
yeah, please.
You know, I would love to see your next phase of research, and then the phase after that, looking at metabolic contributors, like getting kids to wear blue blocker glasses from 7 p.m. on until they go to bed versus not, because we know that causes the impeded melatonin pulse that's created by blue light to go away. And then also deep breathing, getting children, because when children are stressed out, they breathe very shallow. And deep breathing is obviously one way to improve oxygen in the bloodstream, even for short periods of time. Have children do deep breathing exercises when learning something, and see if there's a greater a retainment of what the information that they learn. But sleep has to be a paramount importance, because the young children are not sleeping well today. We have young children who have sleep apnea now. You know, it's so hard to tease out what's meaningful when you have underlying metabolic processes being challenged, and we're assuming their brains are all at the same baseline, and they're not.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. I think we're increasingly realizing that we often think of the brain as some sort of separate system to the rest of the body, but it's not. You know, for instance, in older age, we know that, you know, kind of poor cardiovascular health has knock-on consequences for the brain and for brain health. Other issues to do with, you know, like you were saying, oxygen circulation. We think of, you know, the brain as being really quite distinct from the body, but it's not, and it's affected in just the same way, or in a very similar way to the rest of the body by all of these factors.
Dr. Duncan Astle, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's a very, very important topic, and I think that those in the audience who have children want to do everything that they can to help their children have the greatest advantages in school. Great work, and I hope that you'll come back when you have new research to share with us.
It would be my pleasure.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. He's going to debunk an article that recently appeared in T Nation about ketone supplements, exogenous ketone supplements, being a scam. There's nobody who knows more about ketones than Dr. D'Agostino. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Be dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating. But you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
What do professional athletes such as Kobe Bryant and A-list celebrities such as Selma Hayek have in common? They are all touting the benefits of bone broth. But unless you have countless hours to cook every week or can hire your own personal chef, you're probably missing out on these critical nutrients. Osteobroth is a high-protein, standardized, consistent bone broth in a convenient powdered form. Use promo code SHR for 20% off at osteobroth.com.
The category killer just got upgraded in a big way. New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 is here. Take it before and after training and recover faster than with anabolic steroids. Visit Synthogen.com and use coupon code SHR15 for 15% off. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
A legendary name in hardcore supplementation. Iron Mag Labs. 100% original, patent-pending Andro compound. The most effective, hardcore, groundbreaking bodybuilding supplements in the world. In the world. Iron Mag Labs. Revolutionizing hardcore supplementation for more than a decade. Visit IronMagLabs.com. Iron Mag Labs.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. So recently, several of you in the audience emailed me a link to a T-Nation article written by Mike Sheridan called Avoid This Ketogenic Ripoff, the Keto Supplement Con. Now, I'm not smart enough to tease out what's true and what's not. So I just forwarded the article to Dr. Dominic D'Agostino, who I just was fortunate enough to have dinner with him the night before. With he and his wife, and I said, Dom, look at this article, and what do you think? And he messaged me back within the hour and said, there's a lot of misinformation in this article. I says, okay, great, just come on the show and let's talk about it. So here he is, Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. How you doing, Dom?
Hey, Carl. Good, doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. And so let's do this point by point, right? The article goes on. You know, I will say this. In the defense of people who write blogs, and this is not you because your blogs are more scientific, but in defense of people who write blogs, it's very popular to say something contrary to popular wisdom in order to kind of get more views, if you will. Was that the case in this article when you read through it, or does this article make a strong case that ketone supplements are a scam?
Yeah, the...
the title of the article, what is it, Ketogenic Ripoff, the Ketone Supplement Con.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's way over the top, I think, because the only sort of Mike Sheridan looks to be the author, and he's also actually very pro-keto, just looking at some of his books, and he's written some good stuff. But, you know, he's looking at it through the lens of bodybuilding. And so you have to consider the audience here. So even though he says, you know, ketones could be life-saving for this, that, and the other, neurological disease, cancer, things like that, I think he mentions in the article. But he's just, his main focus, I think, is, or problem he has with ketone supplementation is that he thinks it spikes insulin, and it completely inhibits and will, you know, inhibit your ability to burn fat, which is really not the case. And ketones are calories, and if we call them insulinogenic, we need to compare them to other types of calories. So when you compare ketones to, say, amino acids or protein, amino acids and carbohydrates, they are essentially non-insulinogenic. You know, they hardly, you know, elevate insulin at all. And that's what the studies show. He does reference, although he doesn't put, you know, where he got the reference, he has a figure in the paper showing IV infusion of ketones and showing an increase in insulin in response to that. And if you compare that to any other macronutrient, the insulin would be much higher,
right,
maybe excluding fatty acids. So that needs to be considered as we kind of discuss some of the things that were mentioned in the article. It's viewed through the lens of bodybuilding and kind of warning people that the ketogenic ripoff or ketone supplement con is going to short circuit your efforts to lose body fat. And that's not the case.
Now we're going to go through this point by point, but I do want to make one comment. And this is from a neophyte. You know, I see a lot of ketone supplement companies making the assertion, get into ketosis in 60 minutes. And I just want to be clear about something. That is actually an erroneous statement, because ketosis implies your body is producing ketone bodies from its own fat or dietary fat intake. So ketosis is the body's metabolic manufacturing of ketones. What ketone supplements do is they seem to prime ketolysis, which is the utilization of ketones as an energy source, regardless of where those ketones are being produced from. So can we at least say before we start that a lot of ketone supplement companies are using the term get into ketosis in 60 seconds erroneously?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up. And so if you're in a state of ketosis that's clinically defined as having an elevation of blood ketones above half a millimolar or 0.5 millimolar. And that could be achieved with exogenous ketone salts or esters. Mm. So the issue that kind of he addresses here is that, you know, Mike Sheridan thinks that all the benefits of nutritional ketosis, which there are many, are due to things that are independent of ketones.
Mm-hmm.
So that ketones are some downstream effect of fat oxidation, and, you know, they're basically metabolic byproducts. Or in the old days, we called them, you know, they're metabolic poisons. But now, he's really not up on the new science of ketones, including the many references that he includes in his article, including some of my work, actually, with Deep Dixit at Yale on inflammation, and Dr. Veach's work at NIH, and Sammy Hashem's work, and the article that was recently published in Cell Metabolism on Performance. These articles are specifically, some of the articles that he has in there, like the one on inflammation, for example, where they use our ketone ester, it was added to a high-carbohydrate standard diet. So the nutritional ketosis that was induced that suppresses the NLRP3 inflammasome was independent of the classical, you know, nutritional ketosis, mm-hmm, suppression of insulin to burn body fat. So, and the results of the study then shows that the effects were exclusively dependent upon ketone bodies and not being in a state of nutritional ketosis, which he is a fan of. So we need to, it's not a one or the other. So
right.
When I view, you know, exogenous ketones, I think of them simply as a means to enhance nutritional ketosis, so enhance the therapeutic benefits and also the performance-enhancing benefits. And really, that's why they were developed by DARPA and the Department of Defense, because the military did not really want to do any kind of restriction of warfighter feeding, but right. they wanted an energy, a calorically dense, stable form of energy that could be consumed that would elevate ketone bodies, because the science suggested that, or confirms that ketones are a superior source of fuel, meaning that, you know, you can generate more ATP, you know, for a given amount of oxygen, and per carbon molecule, you get more energy. So that's really the benefit of it, and that needs to be sort of acknowledged before talking about some of the things here. But a lot of people do market it, like you said, as a quick fix, and I think maybe his article was influenced by some of the companies or people in the companies marketing it in that way.
Yeah, I think what happens is, we see this often in the supplement industry especially. So something proves to be efficacious, and then companies have marketing people who have to write compelling copy to get people to buy things, and they tend to trash the truth, or let's say not trash the truth, but they seem to toy with accuracy. They stretch the truth a little bit, you know, because that kind of stuff sells better. And I get it with him, if that's his beef. I get it, because I'm sick and tired of that too, from all aspects of the supplement industry. But at the same time, we can't just abandon this amazing supplement. So let's go ahead and start. Take his first point that you want to take, and let's do it kind of like a Snope. So give me a agree or disagree, and then why? How about that?
Okay, sure.
Okay.
So you're gonna go point by point
Well, he says the truth about exogenous ketones, that ketones equal endogenous fat storage. Exogenous ketones equals endogenous fat storage. So he's implying that if you take ketone supplements, that inherently will produce fat creation.
Well, what if you eat fat? You know, we know that, so you have to view the body as, you know, a unique metabolic physiology entity. You know, there's a lot of things going on. And I think he comes at it from the perspective, I guess I agree with him, is that drinking ketone calories does not make you burn fat.
Right.
It could, and I've mentioned this in podcasts, that if you're getting excess calories in the form of any macronutrient, surplus calories will end up as fat in one way or another. Although I would say that ketone calories, or calories in the form of ketones, if consumed in surplus, would be less likely to be stored as fat than carbohydrates, absolutely, and protein even, and maybe even fat, because they're such small molecules, they get quickly oxidized. They're used preferentially as energy, whereas some of the larger, you know, macronutrients will be stored as fat, and we know that if we were to drink, you know, carbohydrates or glucose instead of ketones, our body would be making a lot more fat than it would be by consuming, you know, ketones in general. And I think what he kind of points to is that ketones can elevate insulin, and that's not the case. He doesn't have any evidence showing that if you consume exogenous ketones orally, that it elevates insulin. There's really no evidence. Actually, what the evidence shows, that if you consume exogenous ketones over time, your baseline insulin levels go down dramatically,
really?
Even like 50%. And also your insulin sensitivity increases dramatically. The work by Dr. Veach at NIH showed that. And we know, you know, insulin, people don't need to be afraid of the insulin boogeyman. I mean, a little spike in insulin is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
And we have not actually even shown that. I think the latest paper by Cox et al. Had shown that in athletes, if they consume a large amount, they get a small spike. Nowhere near, you know, what you'd get with carbohydrates, but
right.
You do get a small spike. And I think that small spike is actually optimal for shuttling, you know, a large spike repeatedly can induce insulin resistance, but small spikes, especially in and around exercise, can be anti-catabolic and can prevent the muscle
breakdown. Let me ask you a question. Hold on. Let me ask you a question, right? So we know that metabolic ketone acidosis, which is suffered by diabetics, is the presence of both ketones and glucose in high levels in the bloodstream simultaneously. And this is a very, very dangerous state. So our bodies are hybrids, but they want you to choose. Either we're going to burn ketones, we're going to burn glucose. What if the small but obvious insulin spike in the presence of ketones is the body's attempt to get glucose out of the bloodstream because ketones are here now?
Well, okay, so that's a very good question. So when we think about de novo ketogenesis, or our bodies making endogenous ketones, you know, I like to kind of start in with fasting, but let's just start with a ketogenic diet. And on the ketogenic diet, your body is making ketones because it's suppressing the hormone insulin, and you have accelerated beta oxidation in the liver. And then you accumulate acetyl-CoA, and that eventually can make acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate. So that process needs to be sustained. And if you're eating a ketogenic diet and it's very, very strict, and your ketone levels start to get elevated high from 2, 3, 4, and up to 5 millimolar, that 5 millimolar of ketones, beta-hydroxybutyrate and acetoacetate, can stimulate a very small release of insulin in the pancreas, and that will signal to the liver to turn down ketone production in the liver, mm-hmm. that small amount of insulin. It's a very fine-tuned process, and so I think, you know, that's kind of what's going on. That's why consuming exogenous ketones is just basically kind of telling your liver to turn down its rate of exogenous ketone production, but it's a very small increase, and it's even like imperceptible in many of the animal models and even in studies that you do, and it only occurs if your ketone levels get really high. Mm-hmm. And I think with the supplements that are out there now, the ketone salt supplements, I don't think you'd see that. You know, we haven't seen it in animal models. Now, the esters, on the other hand, could potentially give you you know, a high enough dose to cause, you know, measurable insulin response. And I think the Cox et al. Paper showed a small bump in insulin. So I'd venture to say that Mike Sheridan has not really tried any of the ketone products on the market, because he describes them as being nasty tasting. So the ones, Ketogenics improved products, are actually pretty good tasting. He may be alluding to the ketone esters.
Butanediol, which it tastes like you're drinking formaldehyde, but you know, there's probably a way to make that palatable too if it was designed to be a consumer product. I want to take a break. I want to stay with fat loss, because he also makes some other assertions about fat loss. We're talking with Dr. Dominic D'Agostino, and we're addressing an article that appeared in T Nation, written by Mike Sheridan. And we're just analyzing some of his claims in the article. That's all. Stay tuned.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 has stunned the athletic world. Even current and former steroid users can't believe how fast they recover from exercise. If you're looking for a product with real, noticeable results, look no further. In the words of one customer, this is the single best bodybuilding supplement I've ever used. Visit Synthogen.com and get your X2 today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide. Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Dominic D'Agostino. We're talking about an article that was recently written by Mike Sheridan about all ketone supplements are a scam. And really, I think it has, you really have to ask yourself, as he does in the beginning of the article, like, what are your goals? But I had Tony Freeman on the show, right? And we know that Tony uses exogenous ketone supplements to train in the morning. He trains fasted. The guy is ripped. Okay, people are going to say, yeah, but he uses drugs. Doesn't matter. I mean, if he's using them like food, like fuel, and they're working for him. Dave Palumbo. Back in the day, I mean, Dave was ripped all year long. People would say, Dave, how do you stay ripped all year long? He's like, I eat a ketogenic diet, and he still built muscle. People are going to say, oh, he used drugs, but still. So there's something to the ketogenic diet for bodybuilders, and there may be something to ketone supplements. I don't want to just discount them as a new supplement scam, because there is a lot of evidence. So let's talk about ketones and fat loss. Is there anything unique about ketones? Like when I had Joel Green on the show, he told me that that using a ketone supplement can actually improve the, leptin becomes bound by insulin and leads to leptin resistance. And he said that using a ketone supplement can actually unbind. The presence of the ketones actually unbinds leptin from insulin, which makes me ask two questions. A, is this true? And B, if it is true, is that where the excess insulin is showing up from?
There's really not a lot of excess insulin. Actually, the work, the original work looking at insulin done in Veach's lab, which also looked at amyloid beta, which was reduced, and that was something
that's big.
Mike had referenced.
That's big.
Yeah. So just the ketone ester, independent of nutritional ketosis, reduced amyloid beta in the triple transgenic mouse model, which is a really aggressive model. But the male rats that were fed the standard diet with 30% of the calories replaced by the ketone beta-hydroxybutyrate monoester for 14 days, they got a beta-hydroxybutyrate level of about 3.5 millimolar, which is difficult to achieve, with a diet, but it's possible. But this was with a high-carb diet, a standard diet. Both plasma glucose and insulin decreased approximately 15% in these mice. So keep in mind these mice tend to run a little bit
they're kind of like a good model for type 2 diabetes because they're just overeating, sitting in the cage.
Right.
And this is published, so you can look this up on PubMed. And the ketogenic, the ketone ester diet also showed a 73% decrease in the qualitative insulin sensitivity check, or QIKI, it's called. It's a surrogate marker of insulin sensitivity compared to the control, the standard rodent chow. And interestingly, the fasting plasma glucose levels were not really altered too much, but fasting plasma insulin levels were reduced by 85% in the ketogenic or the ketone ester-fed mice compared to the control. So showing exogenous ketones enhance insulin sensitivity. And I can send you the link to a couple articles that showed this. And Veach's work, keep in mind, he doesn't like the high-fat ketogenic diet, and that was one of the reasons, you know, he thinks the ketone ester is so important, and we don't agree on that subject. I'm a fan of the ketogenic diet and also a fan of ketone supplementation, but in all his studies, the ketone ester was added to a diet that's not a ketogenic diet, a high-carbohydrate, you know, standard rodent chow diet. So he sees effects, you know, enhanced antioxidant function, reduced insulin, suppression of amyloid beta in the brain of the triple transgenics. They actually have a case report out with an Alzheimer's patient that was on the ketone ester for a couple of years, actually. So all these benefits are directly attributed to ketones because it was not a ketogenic diet. So, and getting back to your main, kind of the main argument is that he claims that the ketones are very insulinogenic, but compared to what? If you're drinking calories, you know, in the form of carbohydrates or protein, you're going to be spiking insulin. And I'd argue that the small amount of insulin that's increased with a large dose of exogenous ketones, if that's the case, he doesn't show evidence of that in his article. He shows an IV infusion of ketones. But if ketones are bumped up, or if insulin is increased a little bit with a large dose of exogenous ketones, that could have beneficial effects on exercise performance by activating the PDH complex. So a lot of the anti-ketogenic diet people in regards to performance say that the ketogenic diet will have negative effects on performance because it's suppressing pyruvate dehydrogenase complex. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, the ketogenic diet is a standard of care for PDH deficiency. But a small bump in insulin would be enough to keep that PDH complex active. And that's basically the gateway to make glucose for glucose oxidation too into the muscle. So you have both energy systems working more or less unrestricted if you get small amounts of insulin. So that's the benefit and that was kind of talked about with some of the people that are studying exogenous ketones now for exercise performance.
Well, there's, you know, amyloidosis, we're learning, is affecting other organ systems, right? I just did a show a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Amyloidosis of the heart causes fibrosis and heart failure. So it's not just the brain anymore when we talk about these amyloid misfolded or overproduced amyloid proteins getting, like, caught up in tissue. It's not just the brain. It's the heart, and we're going to find out probably the kidneys and every place else. So reducing amyloid in and of itself is a very important thing. So from a bodybuilding standpoint, I mean, you are a strength athlete. You always have been. From a bodybuilding standpoint, do you think that the ketogenic diet is okay, just as good, not as good, a bad idea?
I think it's an excellent idea, especially for even Mike, the author of the article, says as far as exogenous ketones, there's one viable situation where exogenous ketones would be helpful, and that's under the condition of carbohydrate restriction or calorie restriction when you're dieting. But wouldn't that be all dieters?
Yeah.
So who diets on a surplus amount of calories? So the author is basically saying, so under only one condition, under conditions of carb restriction or calorie restriction, would exogenous ketones be helpful? Of course, surplus calories will accumulate in fat.
But that doesn't sound true. And when you look at the research that shows that ketones, regardless of how they end up in your bloodstream, seem to spare glycogen and spare protein muscle protein, one could say eating a normal diet, a bodybuilding diet, whatever that is to a person, but using an exogenous ketone as a pre-workout would actually make the net results of muscle gains better.
Yeah, I was going to, that was going to be my next point, is that the evolutionary role for ketones, okay, we're excluding the fact that they, you know, they ensure that we have a steady fuel flow to the brain so we can hunt things in the fastest condition. I would say equally as important for that function is that the ketones themselves have an anti-catabolic effect. There's a few studies showing that they also have an anabolic effect. I think the title of the article, I have it on my desk, the title is, and it was published in the Journal of Clinical Investigation, The Effect of Beta-Hydroxybutyrate on Whole Body Leucine Kinetics and Fractional Mixed Skeletal Muscle Protein Synthesis in Humans. They actually infuse beta-hydroxybutyrate in humans and show that it impacts protein synthesis in a positive way. And a study just came out like two or three weeks ago with the title, Acetoacetate Accelerates Muscle Regeneration and Ameliorates Muscle Dystrophy in Mice. And it goes through all the different mechanisms. And the mechanisms were really interesting because they're things that you wouldn't think of. So the ketones sensitize the muscle to IGF-1. It antagonizes myostatin. It stimulates satellite cell activation. And this, these effects were independent of AMP kinase and mTOR. And the signaling was through the MEK-ERK pathway. So that might not mean anything to you, but it's from a mechanistic, you know, point of view, this is very compelling data, being that it was published in a high impact journal and Journal of Biological Chemistry, actually. And it just, I mean, it's more evidence that ketones have effects independent of their effects as, from an energy metabolite. They have specific effects on signaling pathways that are anti-catabolic and also anabolic. In regards to cancer, through the study showing metabolic reprogramming induced by ketone bodies diminishes pancreatic cancer cachexia, and that was published in Cancer and Metabolism. And it's a very nice study, and it goes through all the different mechanisms through which ketones are sparing muscle protein. So, yeah, if you are in a calorie-deficient state, you know, you have the ketone-induced anti-catabolic effects. And if you are in a calorie-surplus state, you have, you know, evidence in humans with IV infusion showing that beta-hydroxybutyrate can impact whole body leucine kinetics and stimulate muscle protein synthesis.
Yeah, so the net result is going to be more muscle. And this is why I say, you know, there's a lot of people out there who don't want to suffer, for lack of better terms, the ketogenic diet, but they can benefit from an exogenous ketone supplement if they use it as a pre-workout, you know, an hour before they show up at the gym. Having those ketones in your bloodstream may end up causing the net results of your workout to be greater than if they were not there. I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about intravenous ketones for a second, but more so from a health and therapeutic standpoint. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 has stunned the athletic world. Even current and former steroid users can't believe how fast they recover from exercise. If you're looking for a product with real, noticeable results, look no further. In the words of one customer, this is the single best bodybuilding supplement I've ever used. Visit Synthogen.com and get your X2 today.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating. But you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
A legendary name.
in hardcore supplementation. Iron Mag Labs. 100% original, patent pending Andro compound. The most effective, hardcore, groundbreaking bodybuilding supplements in the world. In the world. Iron Mag Labs. Revolutionizing hardcore supplementation for more than a decade. Visit IronMagLabs.com. IronMagLabs.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be. Ketones are being called the fourth macronutrient because the body loves to use them for energy. Now you can leverage the hunger-fighting, mood-elevating effects of ketones with Keto OS. Take one package in the morning and don't eat again until you're hungry. You won't feel lethargic and you'll be alert and focused. Try Keto OS today. Go to superhumanradio.com, click the Keto OS banner ad to take advantage of the 5-day experience trial package. Leverage the power of ketones with Keto OS.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're going to get back into the T-Nation article in a second, but I wanted to take an opportunity to talk about something kind of exciting, and that is the potential for intravenous ketone infusion in dealing with cancer. Talk about that, Dom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we talked a little bit about exogenous ketones being anti-catabolic. So that can impact cancer cachexia. But kind of more important, I think, is that, you know, ketones are a fuel source used by cells that have robust mitochondrial function, healthy mitochondria. And cancer cells are sort of, even by definition, defective, you know, in mitochondria. They have a Warburg phenotype. So they resort back to substrate level phosphorylation and glycolysis, which is deriving energy pretty much exclusively from glucose and to a lesser extent, but maybe equal extent, glutamine. So I think the benefit of intravenous ketones could be the protein sparing anti-catabolic effects, but ketones have also been shown with IV administration to decrease endogenous glucose production. So they have a direct inhibitory action on hepatic gluconeogenesis, and that's important. And it can block much of the counter-regulatory response associated with hypoglycemia. So this in theory, and this is kind of what we want to do as we move forward to clinical trials, if you give intravenous ketones and get levels up to 3-4 millimolar, you could gradually decrease your glucose level in your body down to 3 to 1 millimolar. And this was done by George Cahill at Harvard Medical School in one of the seminal studies in 1967. And he infused insulin in subjects that were fasted and brought their blood glucose down to 1 millimolar, which is universally fatal in everybody.
Right.
But they were protected against extreme hypoglycemia because they were keto adapted and their ketone levels were elevated. So if that same you know, metabolic physiology was produced in a cancer patient. We know that growing cancer cells require glucose for their growth and proliferation. And if glucose is not available, it triggers programmed cell death called apoptosis because the energetic demands are so high. And, you know, if the energy is not met, you'll get apoptotic cells in the cancer cells. They'll die off if the energy is not there. And that's one way to do that. You could comfortably induce a cancer patient into severe hypoglycemia, and they would be asymptomatic for hypoglycemia if the ketones were elevated. And ketones are not only, cannot be used by cancer cells for fuel, especially, you know, cancer cells that have damaged mitochondria. And I don't know of any study, every single study that has been done on cancer cell mitochondria shows that they're defective in some way, either biochemically or, you know, structurally, functionally in some way.
Yeah.
So that would prevent their use.
I mean, think about this for a second. We're talking about an approach that resembles chemotherapy, but without using toxic to the whole body chemicals.
Yeah, and the ketones are really the way to do it from my perspective. And you can also combine, you know, the ketone IV therapy with a number of cancer-specific metabolic drugs, like 3-bromopyruvate that inhibits hexokinase 2, which is upregulated in cancer cells, 2-deoxyglucose, and even things like, you know, common drugs like metformin may have some application here. And we're interested in sodium phenylbutyrate, sold as Buphenyl, because it's an HDAC inhibitor, but it can also bind up glutamine and help lower blood levels of glutamine, which we know is also a fuel. So if you can envision an IV that has a TPN formula, essentially, that has some medium-chain triglycerides that is completely free of glucose.
Wow.
So a non-glucose IV formula that's giving intravenous nutrition in the form of fatty acids, and you could be a different types of fatty acids, MCTs, and other, we have a whole kind of cocktail of fatty acids, and ketone salts in the form of, you know, sodium, potassium, magnesium, and calcium in a balanced ratio. So you maintain, you know, proper electrolyte balance. Magnesium is often pretty low in cancer patients, so using a magnesium beta-hydroxybutyrate would be a good thing. And doing that and then inducing a state of hypoglycemia through this nutritional intervention, but also with different types of drugs that could, you know, inhibit hepatic gluconeogenesis even further and induce a state of sustained hypoglycemia with therapeutic ketosis. And that would be sort of the press. That would make cancer cells selectively vulnerable. And then you could give various cancer-specific metabolic drugs at that time point. Mm. You could also do hyperbaric oxygen therapy at that time point. And if it's very advanced, and if the type of cancer is amenable to standard of care therapy, that could also be implemented. That would make standard of care much more effective, and it would also decrease the side effects. So I just wrote a review on all this and should be published soon with
Professor Seyfried. That's so exciting. So let's get back and summarize the discussion from the T-Nation article. He has a great summary that I want to use to help kind of close this interview. He says the good and the bad and the ugly. He said it's not all bad when it comes to exogenous ketones, and he goes on to list disease states like Parkinson's, epilepsy, brain cancer, and so on, that they may provide a benefit. And then he also concedes that the aerobic athlete can benefit from them too, because if you're already carb loaded, you can use ketone supplements to kind of extend your fuel, if you will. But suggesting individuals already fasting, restricting calories, or cutting carbs will get anything other than a brain buzz is misleading. In the beginning of the article, he says these are the only cases that you should be using them. So I kind of got confused with that one. So
yeah, there's lots of contradictions, and it's always interesting to see when people like reference your work too, from my colleagues and also my direct work, and say that, you know, the references show absolutely no effect of ketones, but that's exactly what the study did. I mean, it was the ketones were used in, you know, with a standard high carb diet, like he references a lot of Dr. Veach's work and my colleague at Yale, Deep Dixit, with the inflammation paper. And even the work of Eric Verdin, Shimazu would be the first author on that, showing that ketones through functioning as an HDAC inhibitor, enhance endogenous antioxidant mechanisms. And it's independent of calorie restriction or anything. It's the direct effect of ketones. And that was published in Science. And he has that as one of his references in there. So I think he's not reading the references that he's putting in there, because a lot of these effects are directly due to ketones' benefit. And maybe he's under, you know, appreciating the people who read T Nation. I think maybe they have also an interest in health and cancer and Alzheimer's. And,
right.
You know, so the only thing he focuses on is fat, fat oxidation. And his hypothesis is wrong, that ketones are tremendously insulinogenic and will stop all fat. That's not the case. And the one figure he has in there is with IV infusion. The insulin levels does go up, but if you compare it to any other macronutrient, it would be much higher.
Right.
You know, and that has not even been shown with exogenous ketones on the market. And even with the ketone esters that are super powerful, you do get a tiny little bump, but it doesn't even, it's like 10% of what you get with an equivalent amount of calories with carbohydrate.
Yeah.
And insulin's not the boogeyman either. So,
yeah, no, I know.
So insulin is not going to shut off your fat burning process.
Right. Right. Well, listen, I really appreciate you taking time to come on and talk about this. I think that, you know, we have to be careful when we talk in absolutes. What you notice is that science, the rigorous scientists out there that are doing the work, they don't talk in absolutes. Dr. Dominic D doesn't talk in absolutes. This is what we know right now, and this is how it works. And to coin a phrase from my good friend Adele Musa, on the other hand, it's very hard to just say things are black and white. They never are. But I'm glad that you had a chance to come on and talk about this.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Carl.
Of course.
I got a lot of emails about this, too.
Yeah, good, good. So now we can direct people to the interview. Thanks so much, Dom. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, thanks, Carl. Bye-bye.
All right, so there you have it. Also want to thank Dr. Jeff Galini. Reach out to him at superhumanradio.com, ask the scientist, click the banner ad, ask him for some free supplements, or whatever else is that you want to ask him. You can ask him a question to do a show about, that sort of thing. And then, of course, we want to thank Dr. Duncan Astle. Really interesting stuff. For those of us who have had children of the learning age, my kids are grown, but clearly learning children to expand their short-term usable memory, or basically what is considered the RAM portion of the brain, may have some benefits. And hopefully the science will play out soon and we'll have concrete answers. In the meantime, that's all for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.